I see you perceived the absence of edema, Dr. Buzzard. I had absolutely no power of speech or movement, except by great effort the blinking of my eyes and breathing. The voice was somewhere behind me, and it took my eyes some time to focus. When I could move them, I could see that I was bound by straps across my arms, wrists, shins, and ankles into a high-backed wooden chair. The voice somewhere behind me continued in its soft, precise fashion of speech. You have been treated with the most recent preparation of Liquid 1. It invigorates and tones and opens the passages for Liquid 2. I shall be administering that directly. There is no need for you to do more than relax. My eyes rolled frantically. My senses of hearing and smell seemed curiously augmented. I could hear the man very distinctly, even though he seemed to be some distance away in what was a long, narrow workroom, lit quite well by a line of skylights running down the middle of the ceiling. As my vision cleared, I could just make out a little teapoy about 6 feet in front of me, upon which an object stirred memory of Jacob Ali's second drawing. It had only wanted color and more precise recollection on my part to recognize what the little obelisk, arm, and pendant was. The voice broke into my reverie a third time. There is no need to concern yourself with the metronome at present, Dr. Buzzard. Perhaps after the procedure. I should have liked to employ it in some queries, but my associate Scroggins has pressing business with your confederate, and so insisted upon the immediate administration of my first preparation. It is a matter requisite of delicate timing. Scroggins wished you awake for a few moments' interview, but we both agreed, given your activities of the last few days, that reducing you to a state of utter helplessness was advisable. This has been done. Have you seen a lunatic in a strapped chair, boy? I have. I nearly became one myself in those horrible moments. I felt a sufficient quantity of despair and a desperate desire to flee this room, the voice with its simple statements that implied impending dire fates. But I had not even the release of mad and useless straining against the heavy leather and buckles of the straps. I couldn't move! And then I heard heavy footsteps coming around from behind me. Even then I had no image of my unseen tormentor. The form that appeared before me, leaning forward with a triumphant smile on its acromegalic figures, was that of the groom, Scroggins. He stared directly into my eyes for a long time, producing the most intensely disagreeable psychic impression of being searched. It continued for some time before it ceased. His eyes gleamed. With something of a positive nod, the man stepped back from me, and for just a moment, as if from the corner of my eye, I saw the head of a snarling tiger, exactly as drawn by Jacob Ali, replacing his human features. His next manifestation was as disturbing, for the triumphant smile of the groom remained upon the features of the man I most desperately wished to see at that moment, the detective Matthew McGuire. The smile widened into a leer of fiendish malevolence such as I had never espied upon the face of my friend, and then there stood Scroggins once more. Again the voice behind me gave utterance. I should have liked to have witnessed the tableau vivant just presented to you, Dr. Buzzard, but alas, Master Scroggins can manifest it to a single person only. I, too, would enjoy a moment to express my remonstrances to your associate, or perhaps bring him here for a conference, such as you and I currently enjoy. I would savor that examination. Unfortunately, that individual had the discourtesy to injure Master Scroggins rather severely in your encounter of last night. Master Scroggins is a phenomenally expedient healer, but the memory of the pain he suffered is a burden to him that he very soon hopes to ease. It was necessary for him to ascertain the full appearance of the man to whom he considers himself indebted. That individual is undoubtedly even now searching most assiduously for you. Master Scroggins shall forestall that man's opportunities for unwanted interference in our future interaction, Dr. Buzzard, by approaching him, presenting himself as you. Scroggins gave a quick, savage smile over his shoulder. From where it had been draped over a chair, the thing that had worked as Randolph Churchill's groom donned my hat and running coat, and with a punctilio availed itself of my Penang lawyer. It favored me with a final leer before it spun about and walked smartly through a door some distance behind the teapoy and the little device upon it. And so we bid farewell to Mr. Scroggins. He is a difficult associate, is Mr. Scroggins, but our partnership has been mutually profitable. More heavy footsteps on the polished boards of the floor sounded, and at last I saw the form of my tormentor. The hand that first came into view was extraordinarily adipose, but the fleshy nature of the hand and fingers did not suppress a truthful impression of extraordinary strength. The man's physical tenacity had more than ample verification when he bent down and with nearly no perceptible strain lifted the front, then the back of the heavy chair that held me prisoner, in order to place a wide sheet of India rubber under it and over the place directly in front of me. How to describe him? He wore a stained white tunic and a chemist's apron of rubberized material. Imagine a man of nearly my own height, nearly as broad as he was tall, his bulk communicating an impression of greasy flabbiness, buttery skin covering a wide, round face like an orange, with a softly smiling mouth and lips that gave an entirely deceptive impression of gentle humor. The eyes utterly belied any impression of benignity. I have traded glances, and then recently, with creatures from the very bounds of hell. The puckered eyes of this gentle speaker were of the hardest, most directly focused set of oculars I had ever seen. They passed methodically over me for an interval that only felt like hours. This ovoid colossus moved to a large lamp of the argon burner type slightly off to my left, and took a moment to arrange a large faceted silver reflector off to my side. The hairs of my back, less paralyzed than the rest of me, rose in visceral reaction to my understanding of what my captor intended. I was being prepared for surgery. For all his strength, however, the effort seemed to tire him, and he paused to take a moment's breath. Then he reached over out of my field of vision and produced a curious device with a plunger on the end, which he lifted in one hand as he advanced again towards me. There was a curved cone at the end, reminiscent of nothing as so much as a brass musician's mouthpiece, and below that a glass reservoir filled with some dark decoction that responded oleaginously as the instrument shifted. I felt his hand pull down my unresisting jaw with contemptuous ease and precision. Two fingers that tasted of formalin pressed down the back of my tongue as he moved the end of the infernal apparatus into my mouth. "This," he said softly, "is liquid too." With that, a gout of chemicals surged into my throat, marking the end of my span of years without the attack such as you see me suffering through tonight. I have already mentioned an increase in the acuity of my sense of smell and hearing. As the fluid worked its way down my throat, I felt the same discomfort I do now at the very fibers of my shirt. The straps around my limbs surged at once into my perceptions as the discomfort of their tightness multiplied by orders of magnitude. The scent of blood, of formalin, wetting oil, and myriad other unpleasant aromas rose like wraiths to bedevil such efforts at comprehension as I could manage. The taste of the decoction was vile beyond description. Having put down his instrument, my captor smiled. He moved to one side and seized and reversed the chair upon which he settled ponderously. He faced me, with hands resting upon the back of it and supporting the wattles of his chin. He stared into my eyes for a long time as my vision sharpened, then blurred, then sharpened again as I fought not to drown in an ocean of disagreeable sensation. "I never tire of watching the preliminary effects. You will forgive the necessity of my conversation and presence here, Dr. Buzzard, at a time when you would almost certainly desire to be left undisturbed. It is of moment that the regions of your cranium that respond to sight, taste, and hearing be stimulated at present. Their active condition will be of assistance to me later." That'll do.